which case, Mark, if we could turn to you first, please.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. We had quite a lively discussion, and we finished on time. That's also good. We did. Let me just run through the three questions. The first question we addressed was whether the whether there is a case for the ISB to be more proactive with regard to significant application issues and looking for them. I think there was a general feeling within the group that that application and consistent application is becoming, as Hans said, you know, a key issue for the organization, and therefore that it should give given a sufficient weight and also the terms of reference of the implementation committee should probably be given, you know, a bit more status. At the moment, it's in the way that it's been drafted, relatively low key, and it may actually, you know, need a bit more strengthening. So generally, people feel that yes, there could be more done. There was a feeling that, in terms of the information gathering, generally in large jurisdictions, in the larger jurisdictions, there are already quite a number of either formal or informal processes established where constituents, you know, bring application issues, but that especially at the international level, we may still not have, you know, the same level of coordination and the same level of communication as we have at some of the national levels, and therefore there was a feeling that there was something that could still be done in terms of stepping it up at the international level. It was also a concern to a certain extent expressed of at the moment, because it is informal, that certain of the discussions are taking place, and I look also at ourselves as auditors, that discussions are taking place behind closed doors, and that people actually feel that you know, more of that should be more transparent and more in the open. So all of this would suggest that that perhaps that there needs to be a bit more of outreach in a more structured way, and one way for the ISB to do that may be to have a more institutionalized platform where you would bring certain groups together as ISB to talk about potential implementation issues, not to replicate what IFRIG is doing, but really to be a kind of a stock take of what are the things that are occupying people in practice, what are the things that the different stakeholders are seeing, and how worrying are these, and then decide where they have to go, whether it's IFRIG or whether it's the ISB that itself needs to do something with the standards, or whether it is in the form of education materials. So I think that was felt by the group that was something that could be done in terms of who else but regulators and auditors as your first point of contact. Quite interesting, I think Judith made the point back there by others in the group that analysts may also be a good source if you would be looking at what really bothers analysts and where analysts make adjustments, although they may not always be indicative of differences in interpretation. It may also be, you know, where they just see problems with the standards or disagree with the standards, but it may be another source that that you want to look at. And also preparers and national standard setters were mentioned as groups that that would have something to say on the topic. Point was also made in our group that perhaps, you know, as you go and look at the various issues, it may be useful to think of them in different categories, in different buckets, because they may all have you know, kind of different consequences. I think Judith was that suggested perhaps to look at it on recognition issues, measurement issues, classification issues, disclosure issues, and categorize them into these buckets. Then we had some discussion, which is perhaps a bit further away from the implementations, but a bit more of cause and result. The point was made that some people feel that the lack of translations or the lack of simultaneous translations, especially of the earlier due process documents, may still also have an impact on the quality of implementation. The fact that that discussion papers and EDs are not typically done in other versions than English, and therefore that people, as they go through the due process, are not able to, you know, absorb everything in their own language may also, to a certain extent, lead to poor implementation at a later date. So that was one that was flagged as an issue that still, you know, may need to be given some thought. Then finally, we had some brief discussion on the technical inquiry service that was mentioned in the paper, and I think people felt that the reluctance of board members and staff to give any answers to questions that they get is rightly informed. I mean, it is very difficult to, although you want to be more helpful, because very often if you get questions asked, you may not have the full fact pattern. There may be an element of opinion shopping, and therefore there was a general feeling that, you know, being reluctant to actually give answers was right, and was not a feeling that there needed to be anything more than there is at present. I think that more or less sums up what we discussed, but if any of the members of my group wants to add anything or change anything, please go ahead.
Thanks, Mark. Anyone want to supplement Mark's summary? I guess, Mark, one point that came up following on the technical inquiry policy, which, I mean, clearly the group thought it was the only sensible policy for the board to have, but on the other hand also thought some of those conversations and connections were very valuable. So having some resource and some ability to answer the emails, answer the phone or whatever, in the sense of trying to get a sense of what the issue might be, was useful in his own right, but obviously falling well short of offering answers or even hints. All right, then let's move to Karen. Are you ready for group two?
Thanks, Paul. With respect to the first question, we just wanted to preface the response by saying that we thought the focus here should be on consistent application, not interpretation, but application of the standards across countries. So we're not looking at national differences in application necessarily. We did believe the board should be proactive in trying to get at what those issues are, but not go hunting for them. We thought that was important because it's part of protecting the brand and ensuring that we have high quality standards, because sometimes if you get inconsistencies in application across countries, it may be because there's something as simple as a drafting flaw in the standard. We also thought it very important that the board be seen as driving the process. And in the course of doing this, we should not forget that we are using principles-based standards, so we don't need to interpret every single application difference. With respect to question two, we believe that the groups that are identified in the question are appropriate. We thought groups that might be added would be the regional standard setting groups, and there is an organization that I didn't know about until about half an hour ago called, and I'll get the name wrong, but it's an international federation of audit regulators, that because as they do their work, they may define some issues as well. The acronym is IFIAR. For the third question, we thought the existing structure is appropriate to deal with the application issues that are identified. And lastly, on the role focus and role of the implementation committee, we thought the focus of that committee should be on areas where the board could or should do something, which may sound obvious, but I think there are likely many circumstances that come up where you maybe should not do something. The role of the committee should be around information gathering and passing that information on to the IASB. They can be the repository, if you like, the central repository of the issues that are uncovered. In terms of other things that they might do, there were suggestions that that committee could also look for challenges in application of standards. So I think it's more the practical issues around implementation or maintenance of a standard over the longer term. We also wondered if there could be a possible conflict of interest between the role of the implementation committee and the review that's done, I think, by staff members of the big firms' implementation books. They're those giant books they produce, in that they don't always reach the same conclusion, and that's acceptable under IFRS, but if we've got the implementation committee looking for consistency of application and board staff or board members reviewing that application guidance, could that be considered to be a conflict? That's a brief summary of what the group discussed. It was a pretty wide-ranging discussion, so I would ask anyone who was a member of the team to offer up anything that I may have forgotten or misstated.
Thanks, Karen. Any observations from other group members? Karen, I think I momentarily dozed off as you were making your first point, so I didn't quite grasp the distinction. Apologies.
That's very close. Happens to all of us.
If I didn't know you so well, I'd be offended.
The point you were making, or the distinction between consistent application as opposed to interpretation, or was it a consistent application across countries?
Countries. It's trying to get that global application consistently applied.
Rather than getting into national variations. Thank you. Sorry for that. Any other comments or questions? Yep, Michael.
I wanted to clarify one of the points that you made about the conflict of interest. And were you referring to the reference in the policy that we included in Appendix B about reviewing firm materials? Okay. And I must say that certainly in my 3 years at the ISB, I've not ever received any requests from any external parties to review their materials. So I don't know whether others, Wayne has had any experience prior to that.
I've been at the board since 2001 and nobody's ever bothered to ask.
So maybe then we should delete it to avoid
probably
a potential conflict.
That's a useful clarification. All right, any other comments or questions on that one? If not, let's turn to group three, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to question number one, how proactive should the ISB be in this area? Our answer was very. The group concluded that it would be being very proactive in this area would enhance the quality as well as the consistency of reporting under IFRS. With respect to how it should be done, the group was quite supportive of what was described in the paper of structuring relationships with security regulators and technical partners of the large firms. Everyone seemed to be quite supportive of that. One member of the group noted it should be done on a trilateral basis, that all three of those groups should meet at the same time. There was suggestions for other groups that should be reached out to on a proactive basis, including mid-size and smaller accounting firms, technical partners from mid-sized and smaller accounting firms, the national standard setters. As part of IOSCO, there should be active efforts to reach out to the Securities and Exchange Commission. And finally, preparer groups that focus on accounting issues. And in that case, and in the others as well, that realizing that we're adding more and more groups to the mix here, that these should be done on a regional basis to limit the number of additional meetings that have to take place. Moving to question three, there was unanimous agreement on this issue as well, that any application issues should be dealt with by the IFRS Foundation and the current processes that you have. There was a suggestion with respect to the IFRIC rejection letters that it would be helpful if the retrievability of those letters was enhanced, that would not only benefit regulators but also preparers, users, and auditors. Respect to question four and additional comments and advice, there was also suggestions that the IFRS Foundation should make sure that this interpretation committee does not become an additional layer of due process on top of the implementation process that already exists, that it can be part of the repository of where issues should be directed to, together with IFRIC, but it should not add another layer of due process to the extensive process that already exists. So that's a brief summary of the group's discussion, but I'd welcome any additional comments or corrections from any of the individual members of my group. Thank you.
Any other comments from members of the group? Jeff, on your last point about not another layer of due process, would that be consistent with one of the other groups that, you know, should essentially be an information gathering mechanism?
Right, that's consistent with the discussion we had. They didn't want another layer of process slowing down the interpretation process that exists today.
Thank you. All right, last but by no means least, Begonia.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, in our group, we consider that this is a sort of a preliminary paper that deals with the implementations committee, and we did not go very much into the detail of the questions, but on the contrary, it was more like a brainstorming and asking questions to Philippe Danjou, that is chairing the committee and was sitting with us, in order to understand which was the real purpose of that committee. But in any case, we think that this is a very good mechanism to provide visibility about something that is a big concern nowadays, which is the implementation of IFRSs. And this is something that is even more important every time a new country enters into the IFRS world. So we think it's a good idea. Then it took us to a discussion about the first implementers versus the second implementer. So those companies, those countries that start to use IFRSs, and those questions that could come from the other groups. We also talk about the implementation versus enforcement, at what extent there is a clash between these two things, because here we are talking about implementation. Also implementation versus auditing, and even education. So there are many things that are related. But as I said, we understood at the end that this is a sort of a mechanism to learn relatively at the very beginning, to learn about the potential problems in the applications of the standards, to learn these things at an earlier stage in order to make changes if necessary. But the idea is that the implementations committee will bring these issues to the already existing mechanism, so either to the board, the IFRIC, or to the education guidance. So in a way, I think that this responds to question three, so there are enough mechanisms now to deal with that. The next issue that we were talking about was about how to operate and how to get the questions. And then we think that formalizing and structuring the already existing relationships with some groups, and in particular those mentioned here, IOSCO, ESMA, and the auditing firms, this is a good way of approaching the way of capturing the questions. But also, we think that the implementations committee should be ready to receive any questions to any stakeholder, those mentioned in the Appendix A, such as preparers, users, but perhaps it could be also taken into account the National Audit and Technical Committees that in some cases also are very active in solving these issues at the national, at the country level. So they may have also questions interesting to answer. So I think that in a way this also tries to answer question two. Finally, the first question was about the being or not proactive. So I don't think I don't know if this system is being more proactive. I would say it's being very active listening about what's happening and then trying to react, but not the general view. If I had to summarize what the group said, we don't think that the ISB should be proactively looking for that, but listening what others ask. But if there are any other members that want to clarify what I said, I would be very happy to add. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional observations from group four? I think that's an interesting distinction between being proactive as opposed to what you're saying is an active listener, not necessarily seeking out problems, which I think was what April was alluding to before we started the breakouts. Well, my sense is a high level of consensus in terms of support for being active, much more in the listening mode in the first instance. No one wanting new mechanisms, certainly not due process, or we think we've got the tools to work with. Some of them being much more in the case of education than perhaps in the area of standard or an interpretation. And I think this is an area where it's like communications, you know, the possibilities are endless. And it may be careful to not be too ambitious at the outset. If we, you know, spread ourselves too thin, that can be as much of a problem. And I think, meanwhile, the council can help in the sense of raising the awareness of the mechanisms that do exist and working locally to improve those channels. Because at the end of the day, a large part of the responsibility, I think, has to rest with the stakeholders. The ISB can provide the channels and be prepared to listen, but to expect the ISB to reach out and grab people and say, you know, you should have a problem, is not very, very realistic. So I think it's some combination of the two. And I suspect the national and regional bodies would be very keen to play that role. And, as these various mechanisms evolve, the working relationships will evolve as well. So. Philippe, since you chair the implementation committee.
Well, thank you for all the very good input and I think for the consensus which has appeared. A number of very useful suggestions in terms of how to implement those objectives have been made, how to communicate externally, how to receive input. And I would add to that that I would hope that the members of the advisory council also feel a degree of responsibility to inform the implementation committee wherever they see a problem, which they feel should be brought to our attention. So I count on you to also help us achieve these objectives.
Thanks, Philippe. Any other comments? I'm sure we will come back to this topic many times in the future. But I think the general tone here should be very positive in the sense that we're looking for ways to be even more responsive rather than saying, ah, there's a problem here and we're trying to fix it.
Would you like to do your report? I prefer to do it in the morning.
I can do it whenever you like. I can do it now or after.
Well, we are well ahead of schedule. My suggestion would be, we've had Michel Prada with us, the chairman of the trustees, and he will be with us again tomorrow. But it might be useful if you're willing to provide your report this afternoon, allow us to reflect on it overnight, and be even better prepared to put some hard questions to tomorrow if the opportunity should arrive.
First of all, Paul, my apologies. I caught a cold, and my voice is not that good. I hope you will be able to understand what I say. I'm very glad to be here once again to see how dedicated this council is and how interesting the input is for the organization. So thanks for your participation. As you know, we had recently a meeting in Brussels, and before that we had a meeting in July after the meeting of this council that was held in June. There are several items I would like to mention to you. A most important one is a recent one, which is the work that has been done by the IFRS staff on the SEC staff report. When we received this report on the occasion of the Washington meeting, we, as you know, made a communique where we stated that we would look into this report in depth to better understand where our US friends were standing. We also, on this occasion, commissioned a professor from Australia, Professor Ann Tarka, to summarize and analyze the academic research dealing with the benefits of widespread adoption of IFRS. I will come back to the staff report later. Then we looked into the strategy review, and we had a meeting with the monitoring board on their own governance review. You remember the main items that were mentioned there. There was the issue of the enhancement of the transparency and oversight of the IASB's due process, and also the idea that we should organize a greater separation between the governance and standard setting function. By the way, we already took some important decisions there. We appointed our new executive director, Yael Almog, whom many of you have met, and we changed the organization. The chairman of the IASB is no longer serving as the chief executive officer, so the executive management of the organization is now split and in the hands of Yael Almog. We also hired a special staff member dedicated to the trustees, David Lowarth, whom you have already met. And we are consulting on the drafting review of the of our constitution. We've just addressed the issue of consistent application of IFRS. I'll not come back to the discussions we had this afternoon, just to mention the fact that I have been in touch with IOSCO. I attended the board meeting, the strategic board meeting of IOSCO early October, and we have decided together to enhance our collaboration and start a working plan for the future. They have accepted to commit themselves through the so-called public committee number one, which is the former standing committee number one that deals with accounting, auditing, corporate governance. And Julie Erhardt, who chairs this committee, will work with Yael to organize the relationship between the foundation and IOSCO from the point of view of implementation. And clearly, this will be the link that will be established between the implementation committee and the new policy committee number one. I have the feeling that our IOSCO colleagues were very supportive of this initiative. Not to be too long and coming back to what you said previously, it's clearly not an issue of interpretation. It's clearly not an issue of adding another layer of standard setting process. It's clearly trying to bridge the gap between the foundation and the field through a channel that is probably one of the most effective, and that is the securities regulators who are at the forefront of the implementation of the standards. By the way, we have a similar relationship with the ESMA in Europe. Another issue was the issue of a more formalized cooperation arrangement with international, regional, and national authorities. I understand that you have an item on this tomorrow, or did you speak about this morning? I don't know. And the national standard set of
tomorrow.
So I will not expand on that because Hans will come, will be giving a presentation to you tomorrow. This also is a very important issue because it is a follow-up of the strategic review where we clearly identified the need to have a closer relationship with the main standard setters. The difficulty is to find the relevant balance, to have a working device that functions efficiently, and I hope that the proposal that will be made will be operational, but clearly this is something which will take some time to be finalized. And from that point of view, the views of this council will be greatly valued. We also addressed the issue of an agreed methodology for field visits and tests and effect analysis. And we recommended the establishment of a consultative group chaired by the IASB to provide guidance in developing agreed methodology. And the membership of the group was approved by the trustees, DPOC, and this is about to be made public. We talked about XBRL. We had the feeling that there was some distance between the in the previous organization between XBRL issues and the ongoing work of the IASB, and we recommended that XBRL activities be integrated into the technical function. And on that occasion, there was a meeting where David Sidwell and Scott Evans attended, meeting of the XBRL Advisory Council. I don't know how you pronounce this one. Is it XAC or XAC? I don't know exactly. XAC is okay. I have to say they were both impressed by the level of participation and engagement by XAC members. Now, we also talked about a dedicated research capacity. We believe that this organization deserves a stronger capacity in that field, and Alan Teixeira will come to this point later. Finally, we addressed the issue of financing. This is a difficult one. We are in the middle of the river, if I may say so. We started with a funding that was mainly of a private origin. We've moved to a more balanced situation where we have a significant proportion of funding which is provided through, in brackets, public venues. But nevertheless, we still have a system which is not well stabilized and which doesn't provide enough long-term stability. And therefore, we have decided to set up a working group to analyze this in depth and make proposals to the main bodies that are interested in this issue of the funding. An important work was made by the Due Process Oversight Committee. As you know, they have issued for public comment a draft of a revised due process handbook. The comment period was closed on September 5. We received a number of letters of comments and feedback report from the council. Today we are working on the finalization of this review. I would mention a few issues. One was the issue of transparency. Should the DPOC have public sessions? This raises a number of issues, some of them very practical ones, and we will consider the pros and cons on this for the future. There was also some questions raised with the due process protocol that was seen to be too detailed and too prescriptive. In fact, there is probably a sort of misunderstanding there. The due process protocol is merely meant to be a project management tool, so the idea is that it wouldn't be part of the handbook, but nevertheless it would be available on the website. Comments were related to the positioning of the DPOC. Should it be part of the Constitution? And having talked about it, we considered that that wouldn't be appropriate, because we need to have a constitution that establishes the main principles, but not all the working devices of the organizations should be defined in the constitution. That would be detrimental to our capacity to adapt to evolution. The DPOC then had also to comment on a question, which was whether there should be a time limit on the submission of complaints about alleged breaches of due process. They do not think that there should be such a time limit, but they ask that the drafting of the complaints be clarified with regard to the way breaches resolved and reported. Now, we considered a very, to me, difficult issue to identify, which is to clarify the distinction between narrow scope and comprehensive projects. I understand this. You had a discussion today on this issue. Another one was a response to an idea that a minimum 60 days comment period for re-exposure of issues should be set up, and the feeling is that 60 days is probably too short, so we will look into a different conclusion. So the staff and the DPOC are working on this new handbook, and they will finalize their proposals for the trustees to decide at their January 2013 meeting in Hong Kong. We had a few specific letters in July that were addressed. We had no specific ones when we had our last meeting in October. We had a meeting with the monitoring board that went very well. The remaining question is clearly the issue of membership that was mentioned in the report of the monitoring board. The monitoring board considers the possibility to expand its size with four new members coming mainly from major emerging markets, and possibly two more on a rotating basis. The discussions are ongoing with regard to the criterion for membership. The philosophy of it would be that there should be some commitment to allow the use of IFRS, and possibly a consideration given to the funding of the organization. We had an interesting meeting in Brussels, on the occasion of which we had a shareholder event with IFRAG that went, I have to say, extremely well. and that addressed the issues seen from the point of view of the European Union. We had a series of introductory speeches, Pedro Solbes, myself, and Olivier Gerson on behalf of Michel Barnier, and then we had a panel discussion with Hans, Françoise Flores, and a series of panelists. This went extremely well. If I would mention one point which struck me, it was the expression of support from the European Commission representatives for IFRSs. May I quote just a brief sentence in the speech of Olivier Gerson? He emphasized that the aim of the EU is, I quote, to adopt all IFRSs issued by the ISB. Our endorsement process allows us to reject or carve out a standard, but not to modify it. However, our objective is clear. We want the final standards issued by the ISB to be acceptable to our constituents, and we want member states to vote on their adoption. But to achieve this, we need to express our views early in the standard setting process, and we need to be listened to by the ISB. We know that the ISB will have to make choices between different conflicting views from around the world, but we want to make sure that we have the chance to express clearly our position. The procedures and governance of the ISB are key in this regard. We welcome the recent improvements, and we encourage further developments. So I think it was very encouraging for us to have this clear support that was confirmed by Nadia Calvino, who is the Deputy Director General of the Internal Market Directorate. I think I pretty much covered most of the recent developments. I will just end by mentioning that we expressed our thanks and gratitude to four trustees, the terms of office of whom came to an end: Yves Thibault de Silguy, David Sidwell, Paul Tellier, and Jeff von Royen. And on the 12th of October, we announced the appointment of three new trustees: Mrs. Sheila Fraser from Canada, Professor Wiseman Kulu from South Africa, and Dr. Heidi Miller from the United States. And here is my report. Thank you. I can answer questions if they are not too technical.
Thank you very much, Michel. Questions? A number of us were at the event in Brussels, the outreach thing, and I would echo your comments. I mean, it was very positive, I thought, in terms of supporting IFRS. It was a standing room only. In fact, I think they were turning people away who wanted to come. So that's pretty indicative of the ongoing relevance. Michel, you said we're sort of in the middle of the river on funding. I tell you, I have a summer home, and depending on the day of the week, I either have 10 feet of beach or 40. The river can fluctuate pretty dramatically. Funding, you know, is something that we've been discussing, it seems, a long, long time. And as much as everyone subscribes to the notion of broad-based funding, the prospects don't seem to be improving in much.
Is
that not a fair observation?
No. Well, I'm not sure it's not improving. It's a slow process. By the way, fortunately, the level of the river is not changing as much as in your country or in your countryside house. We have a reasonably stable funding. What happened is that during the past years, as I said, we moved from a system that was mainly based on voluntary contributions by a number of stakeholders, consistent with the status of a purely private institution, foundation, to a system where, in a number of countries, as you know, there has been an organization of venues that collect the funding and through different venues provide it with a sort of public commitment. And speaking on my behalf, I would like to underline the fact that due to its success, the IFRS Foundation today is clearly part of the global architecture of regulation, supervision, standard setting, and therefore it has a little changed in its nature. And what we are seeking really is to move in this direction in a more efficient way, find a better balance between the private funding and the, in brackets, public funding, without hampering the independence of the organization, and trying to have a more forward-looking commitment by the participants. It is not yet the case today, and we have to find the relevant organization. Clearly, this deserves a lot of effort and discussions with a number of groupings, the G20, the Financial Stability Board, the EU, the main major standard setters, and this is what we are trying to deliver. I should have mentioned that there is another possibility of funding that we are considering, which is activities that are self-funded. We are clearly a non-for-profit organization. We are not dedicated to commercial activities, but nevertheless, there has always been, like in any organization of that sort, some activities where we could get funding, mainly in the education and content activities. And so the Education and Content Committee is considering the possibility to develop this part of the funding that, by the way, has gone down during the past years. And so having in mind all the innovations that took place from the point of view of dissemination of information, the way we provide services to our constituents, there are probably possibilities to improve the funding of the organization.
We should try to auction an auction a standard to the highest bidder, at least a standard. I think we'll make some good money.
You think so?
To get rid of it.
Yes. Benoit.
I have two questions. One is, I probably didn't understand well, because I'm wondering if you're not making weaker some of the aspects of the standard setter, since you created a sort of other body with executive responsibilities. The second question is concerning the monitoring board. I'm afraid that there might be some type of potential conflict with the trustees, since they want the enlarged number of their constituents, and I don't see exactly why they want such an enlargement. Thank you.
I'm not sure I got the first question. Can you repeat it?
The first question, you said that there will be an executive, I don't know.
Oh, no, I understand, yes.
Yeah.
No, in
so that the standard setting institution will not be responsible for that.
No.
What they used to do in the past.
Oh, I understand. No, this is the follow-up of one of the strategic review commitments. And it's not at all meant to weaken the standard setting process. It's merely an administrative matter We have the Board of Trustees, we have the Standard Board, and we have a sort of CEO dealing with the way the organization is run from the point of view of its management. In the previous situation, the chairman of the Standard Board had to deal with a number of issues that were not linked to standard setting, that were really operational issues. These issues today are in the hands of an executive director who, of course, reports both to the trustees and to the chairman of the board. So I don't think we have weakened the system in any way. We have rationalized it, and we have clarified it. The standard setting body does standard setting. The trustees do whatever they have to do according to the Constitution, and we have an executive officer that deals with all the technical issues of the day-to-day running of the organization. So I don't think there is any difficulty. And by the way, since we have implemented this, I think it works extremely well, and we have had no difficulty whatsoever. With regard to the monitoring board, I'm not their advocate. I'll just try to comment what they intend to do. Your question should be addressed to them. But you know that the way the monitoring board was set up deals with a certain situation in the evolution of the system. And in the monitoring board today, you have IOSCO, you have the EU Commission, you have the USSEC, and you have the Japanese FSA. And the question was whether this was relevant to the way IFRS are disseminated today around the globe, and whether there shouldn't be a stronger representation of some stakeholders that are indirectly represented through IOSCO, but are probably not enough involved in this issue. So the monitoring board has considered that they should widen their membership, and I think that this is quite consistent with the successful development of IFRSs in the emerging countries. So it's clearly to make the monitoring board more inclusive, and I think this is a good evolution.
All right. Seeing no other cards up, thank you again, Michelle, for that. Very helpful. I'll draw to a close the open session. Remind you that this evening we have the usual reception followed by dinner. Before that, we have an education session, which I hope you'll stay to attend. Tomorrow morning, we have breakfast meetings for some groups, and then the full session starting at 9 o'clock. So with that in mind, let's take a 5-minute break while we regroup.